I suspect there are a lot of people in this sanctuary who saw the title for today's sermon and immediately thought of bell bottoms, hideously wide lapels, clothes made of fabrics not known to nature, and big hair. All of this accompanied by a soundtrack and perhaps a desire to dance. It's hard to believe, but back in the 1970s, the hustle was everywhere. It was the done thing. It was big. But now, it's just a piece of trivia. It's the past. Do the hustle? We don't. At least on the dance floor. Because there are other areas of life in which we still hustle now in 2013. We might hustle off to work in the morning. We might hustle to make a living, to put food on the table for the family. And yes, sadly, there are people who are still hustling the way our manager did in this story. Whether it's some two-bit crook shaking down a widow, or a multinational financial institution finding ways to scam its millions of customers, the hustle is still being done today. What are we to make of this story? Of this shrewd manager, this dishonest steward. The translators can't even agree on what he should be called. And they're not alone, because many commentators have found themselves grappling with and challenged and even confounded by this story over the years. Because if we listen to it, it seems like Jesus is lifting up this shady character. He's telling us to do the hustle. Think about the story. This guy was squandering his boss's resources. It wasn't as if things had gone wrong while he was trying to do the right thing. He was squandering those resources. And he was caught out. And the master said, I'm done with you. You're out of here, and I want an accounting. Now, showing a level of self-awareness, the steward recognized he wasn't up for manual labor, and he just couldn't bring himself to beg, so he needed to come up with another option. So off he went, finding his master's debtors and telling them to reduce their bills. Oh, he's a clever one. Notice how he doesn't reduce the bills himself. He gets the debtors to do it. He makes them complicit. And within the context of this story and this time, this was a very powerful thing to do, because so much of life was grounded on what was known as a patron-client relationship. Before this incident, the patron would have been the master and the client, these debtors. But the steward has changed that. He has now made all of the debtors his clients. And so when he's out of a job, he's going to have a place to go. It all seems so clever. But this is happening in the Bible, right? So shouldn't this shady character get his comeuppance? Shouldn't there be a punishment? And even if we took this story out of its biblical context and we were telling it in today's fictional environment, where the noir genre seems to have infused almost every form of storytelling, we would see this guy as being the fellow who's trying, scrabbling, scraping by to make things work, but in the end, it won't happen. He'll lose out. But this is a parable. And parables are stories designed to draw us in, lead us to a point we think we know, and then confound our expectations. And boy, does Jesus do that here. Because what happens at the end of the story? The master commends the steward. You've done well. Quick thinking on your part. So the parable's over. And then we have some sayings from Jesus, and they don't seem to clarify the situation for us anymore, do they? The children of this age are shrewder than the children of light. Who do you trust with stuff? And of course, the familiar saying, you can't serve two masters. You have to choose between God or mammon, God or money. Now, it's not surprising that in this modern age, in contemporary America, preachers are often tempted to go right to the end of the lectionary reading and talk about the choice between God and mammon. Perhaps use it in a stewardship sermon and convince people they should give all their money to the church to do God's work. But that doesn't help us deal with this perplexing, challenging story. And I think a key to unlocking it is to be found in Jesus' observation that the children of this age are shrewder in dealing with their kind than are the children of light. Think about the different people in the parable. The steward, the debtors, the master. The steward understands them. He gets their motivations. He knows what makes them tick. And by being aware of their motivations and their interests and their priorities, he is able to fashion a solution. Now, Jesus is not telling us that we should all go out and start gaming the system, that we should become a bunch of crooks looking to work every angle. But he is telling us to be aware, to pay attention, to look at the world around us. There are things we can learn from people who are not always commendable. Maybe there's that person whose political views we don't care for, who is still investing a lot in the community. Or the person with the crazy busy work ethic who seems to have lost sight of other things in life, but who is getting things done and employing people. We can learn and take away the good things. And here I think the story is telling the church that the church and the faithful need to be clued in just the way the wider society is. We can't say we've got the gospel, we know it all, and therefore everything is going to work out for us. We need to look at the wider culture, not give into it, not subscribe to its norms, but understand it if we are to talk to it and engage with it and possibly affect change. I was reminded of this week when I read of Pope Francis's latest interview, along with a Jesuit publication that was carried in some 16 different venues in multiple languages. Made the front page of the New York Times, it was in the Valley News. And our mainstream media focused on a particular word. Pope says the church should not be obsessed with homosexuality and abortion and contraception. He did say these things, but they weren't what was at the core of his message. What he wanted people to understand was that at the root of all the church does should be the person of Christ and the human person and the relationship that exists between them. Not dogma, not church teaching, but that relationship. And from that, everything else flows. And when we hear that, we can begin to understand some of the things this Pope has been doing over the last 6 months. The change in tenor, the outreach, the inclusive language. He realizes that excluding people, chasing them away, hectoring them, haranguing them, is not going to bring people into the church. And he recognizes there is a deep yearning on the heart of people. There's a reason this Pope has generated such a positive response, even amongst people who don't share all of his theology, all of his interpretation on issues. He sees there's a desire for something. And yes, in our society, we might like our money and our cars and our DVDs and all the other things we can get. But why do we want these things? For security? To fill a hole in our lives? To give us meaning because we don't find it elsewhere? The motivations are innumerable. But they speak to a symptom of a deeper ailment. And that is a sense of alienation and a desire for meaning. And the church can offer that. It can be a place where people can gather together, coming from different viewpoints and walks of life and experiences, and share with one another God's love. That's a message people can respond to. That's a message people can live into. That is a message that people want to hear. And maybe this all sounds obvious, but think about the way people are talking about the Catholic Church today as opposed to the way they did 6 or 7 months ago. Oh, the problems haven't gone away, but people see a new possibility. Well, that can be true for the mainline church also. It can be true for this church and any church. We need to pay attention to the children of the age. We can't keep having self-referential conversations in the church. And all churches, regardless of their theology, are great at doing that. Have to talk to the wider world. We do, after all, have a call to be evangelists, to share the good news, and to focus on the things that Jesus focused on. Reaching out to the outsider, helping the poor and the outcast, healing the sick, and sharing the good news that God is waiting for us to turn back to Him. So there's lots for us to do, to worship and to serve and to engage in fellowship, and yes, to go out and do the hustle.